This is WMUK. I'm Kara LaRance, and joining me now is master's student Chance Trotman Hewitt. And welcome to WMUK.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have a master's student here in the studio, here to talk about your master's recital. I think this is kind of a new experience for me. I'm usually dealing with faculty, and it's nice to see you step up and say, hey, I'm going to be presenting some important pieces, and I want people to know about it.
Well, it's definitely a new experience for me, too, and I just figured, why not? You know, there's an opportunity to come out and talk about how great the Western School of Music is and how excited I am for my recital. Promote the tuba a little bit.
Well, the program, for everyone who's listening, is 2 o'clock on Saturday, and it's free and open to the public. It's at the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It'll be you and I'm sure a number of your musician friends from the School of Music.
Indeed. Accompanying me on piano is the extremely talented Helen Lucan. And then the Graduate Brass Quintet will also be performing a piece, and that's Ray Baz on trumpet, Greg Blakeman on trumpet, Jeremy Larson on horn, and Leland Matsumura on trombone.
Okay, well, let's go back and get your backstory. Before you came to Western, where were you living, and how did you get interested in music?
Well,
Sorry, it's a big question.
No, that's good. I grew up in Colorado. I was born in Boulder, and I got interested in music from a very young age. I was impersonating Bobby McFerrin on our back porch, doing his little 5-minute Wizard of Oz, skit, and I just loved it. I was really into bluegrass, and my parents listened to Bela Fleck all the time. And I just couldn't get enough. I dressed up like Stevie Ray Vaughan and put on a cowboy hat and pretended to play like him. Eventually, in fifth grade, I started playing euphonium. It was just happened to be the instrument that I could make a decent sound on. Clarinet was a no-go. For some reason, though, I always wanted to play oboe. There was something about that little double reed that I liked. But I stuck with euphonium and switched to the tuba in ninth grade and played all the way through DePauw University, where I did my undergrad degree. There's something about that beefy low register of the tuba that I just really love.
And you like it also as a virtuoso instrument. I know in orchestral playing, it's an important role, but often has whole notes and, quarter notes, and it doesn't have a lot of virtuosity jumping out and taking the melody away.
Mm-hmm. And lots of rest in orchestral playing. I'm very good at counting. But it is a virtuosic instrument, and just like any musical instrument should be thought of as having virtuosic capabilities. I think it's often overlooked just because of its size. Similar to the double bass, it's got a deep voice, and it's thought of as clumsy sometimes, but it's really just about the musician who plays any given instrument and having a desire to express something virtuosically and musically.
So what is it like to get a master's degree on an instrument and intending it to be a degree in performance? I imagine you take lessons, but you also give lessons at the same time.
I do. And I think that's one of the most enjoyable parts of getting a master's degree at Western. I don't know what it's like at other schools, of course, but I teach a lot of private lessons in town and over in Mattawan also, a lot of younger students that are just a blast to work with. But the master's degree program here, what I enjoy about it is it is very performance driven. Although the educational curricular component is, of course, a big deal. The performance faculty is just so strong that there's a huge push to build performance skills. And there are so many performance opportunities with the ensembles at Western. It's really fantastic.
Is it possible to be truly prepared for any single performance?
Well, I hope I can say that I'm pretty prepared for my recital coming up this weekend. I guess we'll find out.
I just wonder about that. I mean, with all the course load and the concert schedule, you know, you're getting handed pieces of music by conductors and ensembles, and you have a few weeks to prepare, and sometimes they go well and sometimes they don't. And it just seems like, is there even a scenario where one could completely block out the rest of the world and work and work and work on that one thing, and then have a perfect performance?
Well, I think maybe it's possible, but I'm not sure that I would ever want that, because there's so much of my everyday life and everyday experiences that go into my music making that I don't think I would want to shelter myself, away from the world. I feel like I would lose some kind of human connection that way. And as far as being prepared for, you know, every performance or knowing every measure of every piece that I'm playing, I try. Although being 100% prepared just takes the fun out of it. I like leaving it up to chance a little bit.
Ergo your name. Yeah,
right.
I like that answer. I think, yeah, that's fun. And so now we come to what drove you to pick the pieces for your recital, and obviously a labor of love. This is a calling card in a way. This is kind of who you are at this time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would like to say that there's some grandiose scheme to the program that I put together, but really it's just a collection of pieces that I feel some connection with. Starting with the Aways in Concerto, the first piece on the program, I'm only playing the first movement, but it's just it's a fantastic way to start the recital. It's just such a happy, joyous movement that just sets the mood perfectly, I think. I'd say that my favorite piece on the recital would be the John Williams Tuba Concerto that I'm closing the program with. And the first time I heard the John Williams was last April, I think it was, when the WMU Orchestra got to go over to Detroit and play in Symphony Hall, Orchestra Hall. And we got to sit in on a rehearsal where Dennis Nolte, the DSO tuba player, was performing the John Williams Concerto. And I was just spellbound. I had no idea that this piece even existed. And that was when I decided that I had to play it.
I'm really excited about getting to that a little later in the hour, because John Williams, of course, the famous film composer, we all know some of his themes, and I'm so curious to hear what he would have written as for a tuba soloist. But let's start with Eric Uwaisen, and before we hear it, let me ask if you ever had a chance to meet with him. He's been to Western a couple of times in the last few years.
He has. I've never gotten to meet him. I think the last time that he was here was the year just before I got here. Mm. But I've sure gotten to know his music while I've been here. And like I said, it's a fantastic piece, and I think it's the perfect way to open a recital.
Well, I'm talking to Chance Trotman Hewitt, who will perform his master's recital at 2:00 on Saturday afternoon in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, and it starts with this work. That's music of Eric Ewazin, and I'm talking to trombone, tuba player Chance Trotman Hewitt.
Hey now.
You all get along, right?
Yeah.
Your recital is at 2 o'clock this Saturday in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's your master's recital, and you've called it contemporaneous, which I like. It covers all of the new music on the program, and really accessible new music, as we just heard in the Ewazin piece. What was the title of that again?
The Concerto for Bass Trombone or Tuba. I prefer to just call it the Concerto for Tuba myself, although we were listening to Charlie Vernon, bass trombonist of the Chicago Symphony, perform it. And he does sound pretty good.
Yes, he does. You will be playing that with a piano reduction score, and Helen Lucan, the wonderful pianist,
yes,
will be accompanying you.
She's just so fantastic to play with. She's playing an ensemble with her is just so easy, and collaborating with her on musical decisions is a piece of cake. We all love having her accompany us.
Now, before we move on from the Ewazin, I have to. Ever since I learned that Ewazin wrote the NPR political music,
that's right.
That's Ewazin, and he's also in person. I've met him in person, and absolute teddy bear of a man, just fantastic to talk to, very humble.
And you can kind of get that from his music.
I think you can. Yeah, it's engaging, and it's got a lot of personality.
Absolutely.
Chance, tell me about your studies at Western with, is it Jacob, Dr. Cameron?
Yep, Dr. Jacob Cameron. Well, I didn't know Dr. Cameron before coming to Western. I had auditioned for their Spectrum Brass Seminar up at the Bayview Music Festival that the Spectrum Brass Quintet does every summer. And Professor Scott Thornburg is also in that group. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for me to go that summer, but Dr. Cameron happened to remember me when the assistantship opened up and wrote to me and asked if I was interested. And, well, I was working at a golf course back home at the time and just practicing on my own. So I thought, well, that sounds great. Kalamazoo sounds fantastic, and I love bells. It's a perfect place to go. And I've really enjoyed my time with him. He's helped my playing immensely from a fundamental aspect. I think it's just my year and a half, or a little over now, has just really bolstered the basics of my playing. Which is a huge deal for any musician.
To be able to see one's own progress, I think, is so significant.
And I think sometimes we, especially as at the master's level, we can work ourselves into a hole, just practicing, you know, the same thing all the time, just yearning to improve. And it is nice to be able to see little glimpses of progress every now and then. And I think it's important to look out for those, too, and notice them.
Looking back at what we were talking about earlier, I really like that you said your impulse is not to be more isolated and spend more hours in the practice room, maybe making yourself a little crazy, but to continue to interact and really listen to what your peers and everyone else is doing as a way of improving as a musician.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not to say that I don't lock myself in my office and practice for hours on end, which is also very productive at times. I think it's important to go out and go to your peers' recitals. I mean, after all, these are the people that we'll be making music with for the rest of our lives. So I think we should enjoy their music now while we can. And there's always just so much that you can learn from listening to someone else perform, whether it's on your own instrument or a completely different instrument. There's always something that you can learn.
What are some of the friendships you've made while you've been here?
Well, I've definitely made more close professional friendships here than I have before. I have to say that since graduating from DePauw, my girlfriend has moved up to Kalamazoo, which is awesome. I think she's listening right now. And so it's really great having her. And all the graduate assistants are so close. I mean, we all share. Well, I'm upstairs now, which is kind of sad in the instrument control hideaway. But we all shared a hallway downstairs in the Dalton Center, and just keep our doors open and walk around, and everybody says hi and intrudes on each other's practicing for a little sanity refresher.
Mm-hmm. Right. Make sure no one gets left alone too long.
Yeah.
It is a lot of pressure. I'm sure you had a lot of coursework as well, a lot of papers to write. Were they mostly about playing the instrument, or did you go off into other areas, music history and things like that?
A little bit of both. The intro to research class that every master's student takes, I took with Dr. Alex Cannon my first year. And what was nice about Dr. Cannon's class was that many of the projects were geared towards our own particular interests. So I could kind of tailor it to the tuba. While other projects were more laid out, we talked about the coronation of Poppaea and things like that. And I took a Baroque music class, and obviously there's no tuba in the Baroque time; wasn't invented until 1835. But that's not to say that I didn't get some things out of that Baroque class that I can apply to my music.
What were the bass instruments of the time? Probably on strings, mostly.
Mostly strings. Yeah. And then there was also a serpent was the probably grandfather, I guess you could say, of the tuba.
You said 1835. I'm assuming you know the history. So how did the tuba actually come about?
Well, at the time, most of the bass function of the brass family was the ophicleide. They've kind of, most composers had moved on from the serpent, although many still wrote for it.
Ophicleide?
Ophicleide.
Okay.
O-P-H. it's a really funky instrument that kind of looks like a bassoon, although it's played with a brass mouthpiece. So it has keyholes, and it's made out of wood mostly, but it's played with a brass mouthpiece. So it's known for just wonky intonation, not exactly consistent tone throughout the brass section. So this guy, Johann Moritz, decided that he had to just make a bigger brass instrument. And the F-tuba was born.
Which design did he base his pattern from? The French horn, or
he took some inspiration from, I think, the horn and from the trumpets of the time.
Just said bigger.
Yeah, just blew it up.
Any valves at that time, or
the valves were invented just before then? I think in the second decade of the 1800s.
So it came out sounding pretty good.
Well, maybe. And it did. It was at least able to play chromatically, which was a huge deal. And it provided a more consistent tone throughout the brass section. But they've definitely made some progress in the manufacturing of tubas since then.
Are you playing a tuba that you love?
I'm playing two tubas that I love. Before I came out to Western, I was able to get my first F tuba, which I'll be playing for my whole recital. And it was previously owned by the tubist of the Dallas Symphony back in the 80s, which I didn't know when I purchased. It just so happened that this guy about 15 minutes away from my house in Colorado was selling a tuba, and I went down and tried it, and I loved it. So it worked out.
That is great. Do tubas stay the same, improve, or deteriorate with age?
Well, I mean, just like with any instrument, you have to wrap it in blankets and make sure it sleeps on a pillow and that kind of thing. it's just a matter of taking care of it. I haven't noticed any depreciation and in my tubas. Hopefully they last a while. They're so expensive. I can't really afford to buy any new ones.
There's this theory. I tend to discount most of the time. And then once in a while, I'll feel that maybe there's some truth to it about simply playing in an instrument and how somehow the vibrations have an effect on tone. And if you can play out an instrument, like sort of out of its best sound from over playing, mm-hmm. I don't know. It makes really no sense when I stop and think about it. Too many vibrations.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. This is going to sound weird, but a few days ago when I was practicing, I think I found, speaking of vibrations, the frequency that my body resonates at. So I challenge anyone listening to go find a tuba and play just a few pitches and see how it feels when you just find the right one.
Are you sure it wasn't the chair you were sitting
in? It might have been, Kara. I don't know. I just want to convince myself that it was the tuba.
Chance Trotman Hewitt will perform his master's recital this Saturday at 2 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's a free concert. And let's look at the next piece on the program. We are really eating up this hour with our chat. So let's look at the music. This is a major name, Penderecki.
He's a Polish composer who is still alive today. And I guess I should mention contemporaneous. The title of my recital, as you said, just kind of encapsulates that all of the pieces that I'm performing on the recital are contemporary pieces. And part of that is because there was no significant tuba repertoire until 1954. So most of the good pieces have been written, you know, recently.
1950 is okay. I'm going to try to sound smart. Is that the Vaughan Williams Concerto?
Exactly.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Ray Vaughan Williams wrote a tuba concerto.
Yep, that's it.
Okay, good. Yeah.
And so getting to the Penderecki, interesting story about this piece. It was commissioned by the Warsaw Symphony, and Penderecki maintains that the commission just totally slipped his mind. And so the opening theme came to him when he was sitting at home, and then finished the piece like in the next 3 hours. And the interesting part is that this piece has become just an absolute staple of the tuba repertoire, that, you know, he just sat down and wrote in 3 hours, and it was premiered 3 days later.
What are the instruments he calls for besides tuba?
It's just a solo tuba work.
Oh, tuba alone. How wonderful. Well, let's have a listen. And you brought along a recording. Is this anyone, who is the performer on this?
Dan Parentoni is the performer, who's a longtime tuba professor at Indiana University.
That's music of Penderecki, a piece I've never heard, Chance. I love it.
It's an interesting one.
I think it has a lot of like humorous folk elements, kind of like Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks.
Yeah.
Kind of. Very fun.
Yeah, kind of. It's a crazy piece, very fun. And then it has these dark moments that kind of come out of nowhere and then just turns around.
There was a note just before the end there. Was that a mistake? It sounded like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, right. It's actually indicated in the music to flutter tongue that note and down in that register to to flutter tongue, it just comes out and all sounding like that.
I mean, you're already fluttering your lips into the mouthpiece, and then to have to flutter your tongue at the same time, that's pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that he only indicated that on two notes out of the piece instead of any more than that.
Is that a piece you've had to teach before?
I have never had to teach that piece.
I mean, how do you go about interpreting this solo?
I think that's the hardest part. It's written completely without meter.
Oh dear.
So there's no particular phrasing scheme that you can gather from the meter. It's kind of just a matter of, Dr. Cameron and I have spent many hours working on this, but it's kind of a matter of breaking up the phrases according to the rhythm, as opposed to, which is, I guess, just like with any piece, you figure out where the phrase is going based on the rhythmic structure. And this piece is so rhythmic that it kind of lays itself out more naturally than you might think.
I would go just desperately screaming for some sort of contemporary recording that Penderecki approved of, like, Penderecki, if he signed off on someone's performance, I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to base my interpretation on.
And that's the tricky part. It's because it's such a staple in the repertoire. There's so many recordings of it, but most people just play it about the same way. And that's based on some of the earlier recordings of Parentoni and Roger Bobo. However, there's one early recording of a Polish tuba player that the piece was premiered by that is about 2.5 minutes shorter than this recording, and it's just at breakneck speeds and high intensity volume the whole time. It's like a baby ran outside and just started screaming in the snow or something. It's one of the craziest recordings I think I've ever heard.
But Polish isn't Penderecki. Wouldn't that be like the ethnic, cultural, correct way to do it?
Yeah, you would think so.
Because Penderecki, he is Polish.
Right? Yep.
Yeah.
But I will not be performing it that way on Saturday.
Okay. Let's remind listeners that Chance Trotman Hewitt's Master's Recital is Saturday at 2:00 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And it's free, open to the public, and will feature not only Chance, but many performers associated with the School of Music, including Helen Lucan. But this one's just yourself as a solo.
Yep.
Any thoughts on what might come after you receive your master's degree, and are you going to move away, find another program?
Well, it's still kind of up in the air. I really love Kalamazoo, and I think that there's a lot of there are rich musical opportunities here, I think, and it's just a great arts community, very supportive arts community. So I would like to stay around here. I have a couple of auditions for DMA programs at a few different schools, and we'll see what happens with those. I'm kind of putting off making any decision until those happen.
When you go home, though, in Colorado, and you see the mountains, you think, ah, this is where I belong.
Oh, you didn't have to remind me of that one. Yeah, there's something about Colorado that is just, I love. And it will always be a part of me. At some point in my life, I will go back. Now, going back to isolating yourself, there's this cabin in South Park, Colorado, that is just like, it's like my Walden. My parents have taken me there since I was little, so at some point I think I would love to go back and build a cabin in the Rockies somewhere and just play the tuba, you know, or
to more... the mountains.
Yeah.
It might sound rather good out there.
It might.
Yeah, it is hard to find a supportive community, because it doesn't just take a musician being good. It takes so much more than that. It takes people who are good organizers, and of course, audiences who whose ears stay fresh and enjoy hearing a variety of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It doesn't happen everywhere. And as the longer we live here, kind of realize this is quite special. So I'm glad you've been such an important part of it for as long as you've been here.
Well, I'm just happy to be a part of it. Like I said, I didn't know much about Kalamazoo prior to coming here, but I've been just like pleasantly surprised since I got. I had no idea what to expect, but it's really been great living here, and I hope to continue to live here and perform here.
Well, there's a good chance you may. There's so many opportunities, as you said, to take out that horn and play with a lot of different people. Let's go back to the music here as we're close to the end of the hour. And I'm excited. Here we are at the John Williams Concerto. His catalog is enormous, and his concert pieces are really good. And it's so nice to have a chance to hear one. Tell me how you discovered this piece.
Well, it was back in, when was it? April of last year, I believe. That the Western University Orchestra got to go over to Detroit, and we were conducted by the Detroit Symphony conductor Leonard Slatkin on Hindemith's Symphonic Metamorphosis, which was awesome. And the rehearsal that we observed featured the concert that they were preparing featured several soloists from the orchestra, and one of them was their tuba player, Dennis Nolte, who was performing the John Williams Concerto that week. And that was the first time I'd ever heard the piece, and I was just blown away by it. I mean, right there on the spot, I thought, okay, I'm going to buy this music, and I'm going to play it this year for the concerto competition. I'm going to put it on my recital, and I just love it.
Who did John Williams write the music for? Do you know?
It was written for Chester Schmitz of the Boston Symphony. He's no longer with the Boston Symphony, but John Williams wrote it in 1985 for the centennial celebration of the Boston Pops, and then it was premiered by Chester Schmitz.
Oh, I didn't realize the work went back to the 80s. He had a long association with the Boston Pops and Boston musicians, so... what would you say if we were to compare it to some of his more energetic film scores? Where do they meet and where do they come apart in comparing the concerto to the film scores?
I think that there are a lot of cinematic episodes in the concerto, especially in the third movement of the piece. The third movement is, I always think of it as cowboy music. It sounds a lot like Aaron Copland, and that traditional kind of, giddy up American music, that you hear and you just know is distinctly American. And then the first movement also features some cinematic, kind of larger leaps and melodies that are composed of several leaps in a row, which is kind of unusual. The second movement is a much more, much slower, more lyrical movement that contrasts the outer two perfectly, I think. It's just some of his best writing, I think.
Well, let's hear the third movement and remind listeners again, my guest is Chance Trotman Hewitt, and his master's recital is at 2:00 on Saturday in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. That applause is not for you, Chance.
But it will be on Saturday.
But it will be on Saturday. My guest is tuba player Chance Trotman Hewitt. And I guess you just dropped a bomb on me in the last few seconds here. You said you'd participated in the concerto competition, and I was too sensitive to ask how it went, just in case it didn't come out to a good outcome. But you said you're one of the finalists of the concerto competition.
Yeah,
so congratulations.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited about it.
You'll be playing this work, a movement of this work, with the University Symphony in April.
I'll actually be playing the work in its entirety with the orchestra in April.
Oh, fantastic.
Even more exciting.
Yeah, so the John Williams Tuba Concerto, played by the University Symphony Orchestra with you as soloist.
Yep.
Well, congratulations again.
Thank you.
That's great. And there are two other winners of the concerto competition, so there's always three concerto performances on those concerto concert shows.
Yep. And
shows.
And this one, it should be a very good program. The other two winners are Amber Feltrin on timpani and Maria Vizcarra on flute.
Oh.
So it's a nice, varied group.
Well, congratulations to all of them. What was it like to compete? Was that Sunday?
The finals were Sunday night.
Yeah.
Yep. It was the finals themselves were probably the most nervous that I've been for a performance in a while. But it's just this piece especially, I think, is just so fun to play that that alone helped calm the nerves a little bit. It's just really exciting. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you had a good performance and under more pressure than usual. Yeah. So I guess we're near the end of the hour. It's time for to say goodbye and to think of any last things to remind listeners of. I guess I would say again, it's 2:00 on Saturday in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Any people that you wanted to acknowledge before we go off the air here?
Well, I have to thank Dr. Jacob Cameron for all the extra time that he's given me and all the positive feedback that I get from him. It's fantastic to have a pair of ears like his listening to what comes out of my bell and being able to give me such precise feedback that I can immediately apply to the horn. That's a special thing in a teacher, I think. I have to thank my parents, of course, for helping to buy my first tuba. And they're actually in town this week for my recital, which is cool. They were able to fly back over from China. Since this is the Chinese New Year, they have the week off. So they're here and listening now, I think. Thank you. And also Clara, my girlfriend, for putting up with me and playing tuba all the time in the living room. So thank you, Clara. It's nice.
Well, it's really nice to have you here, Chance, and I wish you all the best on Saturday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Would you introduce this last piece on your program by Anthony Plogue?
Sure. Anthony Plogue wrote the Sonata for Tuba in 2007. It's very similar in a lot of ways to Plogue's other music. There's some lots of chromaticism and snake-like kind of weaving lines and a lot of ensemble playing with the piano that at times, if it's played right, sounds almost just like one instrument.
Thing to know about Plogue is he's a brass player himself, correct?
He is. He's a trumpet player.
So he knows what you really can do if he wants you to.
Absolutely. Which is what's so great about this piece in particular. It's just written so well for tuba. The range is great. Certain finger patterns are ideal. But when you get down to it, it's just fantastic music.
Thank you so much, Chance.
Thank you, Kara.